In the beginning of Parshas Miketz, we read the famous story about Paro and his dream. So the Torah tells us, "Vayehi Miketz Nasayim Yamim, uParo Cholem Vihine Omed Al Hayar." Paro has a dream, and he sees that there are cows on the side of the river. Vihine Sheva Paros Acheros Olas Achareim. He sees another seven cows going after them, and Paro sees this vision. Vayikatz Paro, the Torah says, and he wakes up. Vayishan, and then he goes back to sleep. Vayachalom Shenis. He has a second dream, as we all know the story. And the second dream is where Paro sees a vision of the different stalks of wheat, and he sees all of the produce growing in Mitzrayim. In describing this very unusual story, as we just mentioned, the Torah says, Vayikatz Paro, Paro wakes up, and then it says, Vayishan, he goes back to sleep, Vayachalom Shenis. So what happens is, in my opinion, I feel it's an incredible point that often gets overlooked. Paro has a great and an incredible revelation in his dream. And God was clearly communicating with him, there's no doubt about it. God was certainly sending him a very important message. But all he does, as the Torah says, is he rolls over and he goes right back to sleep. Vayishan, he goes to sleep. Vayachalom shenis. And then God says, well, obviously he didn't get the message, he went back to sleep. I have to send him another dream, because the first time didn't work. And when you contrast this to the response with Yaakov Avinu, just a few parshios earlier, who also we're told has a dream. He goes to sleep on the Makom HaMikdash, and we are told, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso, Yaakov wakes up immediately from his dream, Vayomer, and he proclaims, Achein Yesh Hashem B'Makom HaZeh V'Anochi Lo Yadati. Immediately upon having this incredible revelation that God gives him, he wakes up and he recognizes that this is a unique moment in time. This is a very historic moment, and one cannot simply ignore the great moments of inspiration like this one. And that's why Yaakov Avinu immediately responds and he says, Achein Yesh Hashem B'Makom HaZeh. He doesn't just roll back over and go back to sleep. Paro in our parsha, that's his response. That's his reaction, and God has to up the ante and come back to him again. Yaakov Avinu, we find, wakes up immediately when he has this revelation and he understands that there's something very special, very unique going on. When I was learning at the Kollel in YU, we used to have periodic luncheons with Rabbi Lam in his office, and they were very enjoyable, in my opinion. And at one point, one week when we had this luncheon, he shared a very powerful insight with our small chabura, which is something that, quite frankly, I think about all the time, because it made a really incredibly deep impression, a great impact on me. I think it was a very simple and fairly obvious point when you think about it, but it's something that I otherwise would never have noticed on my own. So he pointed out that there are three different stories in Tanakh about women who are confronted with a particularly challenging personal circumstance. All three of them, the Torah says, when they were faced with this challenge, began to cry. But he says, when you look carefully at the story, there's an important distinction that often goes unnoticed, and you don't see it unless you pay attention to it. So these three women that we're referring to are the woman in the story of Avraham Avinu's life, Hagar, who's thrown out of Avraham Avinu's house. We have the story of Rachel. And we finally have the story in Navi of Chana. So all of them, the Torah says, were moved to tears while bemoaning their personal lot in life. So let's begin with the first. Hagar, as we know, was driven out of the home of Avraham Avinu with her son Yishmael. And Yishmael is a young man, and Hagar doesn't know what to do. And they were given almost nothing on their way out. They're sent out into the desert, and they're starving, and they're thirsty. And it says that Hagar notices that her child is about to die, and she sees Yishmael, there's no chance of survival for him. After all, Avraham Avinu didn't send me out with anything to sustain his life. Says the Pasuk, Vatelech vateshev la mineged, she positions herself at a distance to Yishmael, harchek kimitachav ikeshes, at a certain distance from this child. Ki amra, why does she not stand right next to him? Because she says, Al Arab Mos Hayelet, because she says, I do not want to see the death of my child. I don't want to be a part of that experience. Vateshev mineged, and she sits there, Vatisa Eskola Vatef. And the Torah tells us she sits there and she's weeping and she's raising her voice and she feels terrible that her son is about to lose his life. That's the first story that the Chumash tells us. The second one we're told is about Rachel Imenu. When she sees Benevuah, that her children will live through a very long and a bitter exile. So we're told, Rachel mevaka al baneha, Rachel begins to cry for her children, me'ana lihinachem, she refuses to be comforted, refuses to be consoled, al baneha ki enenu. She's thinking about the galus, about how terrible life is going to be for her children, and she begins to cry. And finally, the third story that we're told is about Chana. And Chana, as we very well know, The Haftorah that we read on Rosh Hashanah, Chana was pained by the fact that she didn't have children. And everyone else around her and her co-wife are having children and going to the Beis HaMikdash and enjoying their family time. But Chana, the Torah says, Vihi maras nafesh, she was terribly depressed. Vatispalel al Hashem, and she's davening incessantly to God, uvachosivka, and she's crying. So those are the three stories. So Rabbi Lam suggested that although the three women cried, and although we find that all three of them had a similar response, he says that there is an aspect of each one of the stories that was dramatically different from the other. So he goes through and he explains the following. Hagar sought the solution to her problem by doing what? By closing her eyes, by trying not to see what was happening, by turning her head away from the tragedy. As she says, Al na ereh, I don't want to observe, I don't want to witness everything that is clearly unfolding in front of my own eyes. So she chooses the route of denial. And that's a natural defense mechanism that we have, that we can just simply turn our heads away and deny the fact that there's a terrible circumstance going on in front of us, a terrible situation unfolding, and it's much easier for us just to turn away and not have to deal with it. That's the most natural defense mechanism of a human being when dealing, when confronted with a problem. And that was the response, that was the reaction of Hagar. We then move to the story of Rachel Imenu, who begins to cry when she looks forward in the Nevuah to the days of when her children will be living in a foreign and an unfriendly land. But no specific mention is made in the Navi or in the Torah of her doing anything practical to solve the tragedy that she was facing. Rachel Imenu doesn't really do anything to get her children not to have to suffer through that galus. And what we see is, in the Torah, that she's fully optimistic and she's fully confident that someday her children will be worthy of coming back and returning to their own land. Rachel Mevakal Banah, she cries, but she knows that at some point the Jewish people are going to come back and they'll be in their land. But Chana's response, when you look carefully in the Navi, Chana's response was dramatically different. And here the Psukim tell us that when Chana was suffering and she's crying and she's feeling terrible that God has not blessed her with children, what are we told? Vatidor neder vatomar. Chana takes upon herself a pledge and she says, Hashem Tzivakos, Imra'o tireh ba'ani amasecha, if you will see the plight of your inadequate servant, Uzachar tani, and you will remember me, and you will give me children, V'lusishkach es amisecha v'nasata zera anashem, and you will grant me the opportunity to raise a child, then, V'nasativ l'Hashem kol yimei chayev, I will give him over to God for service to you, Umar le'yala rosho, I will dedicate him for the duration of his life over to you. So he told us at the time that throughout our years in the rabbinate, and he said throughout our lives, we would be faced with many different experiences, and we would have many times where there would be powerful moments in our lives. And he suggested to us that we think about the very personal question, and that is, what will my response be when I go through something that's a moment of deep inspiration? How will I respond, like which one of these tremendous figures in Chumash, like Hagar, like Rachel Imenu, or like Chana? How would we choose to react? Because the truth is, it's always our choice how we respond and how we react in a practical way to the things that we experience throughout our lives. We can have the opportunity to react like Hagar. We can simply turn our faces away and we can say that this experience that we just went through is not relevant to us at all. And there are some of us who choose that response, who choose that reaction. There are others who look at something very powerful, very meaningful, like Rachel Imenu, and they say, well, I'm deeply moved, I'm deeply inspired. Personally, it's not going to change my life, but I dream about the fact that maybe at some point in the future, one of my grandchildren is going to do something great that's going to reflect the tremendous inspiration that I'm having from this experience that I had. And that too is something that some people choose to react. They say it's not for me, but it's not something they push out of the way. They say they hope in the future it will be something that's relevant to their descendants. But he suggested, what? They all cried, that's just human, that's what we do.
No, but I'm saying, maybe that's the only way they understood. The difference is that you're talking about three different situations. How you handle the situation.
That's the question. How do you handle and how do you respond? How do you react?
You have to look at the people, what they're doing. Like when you said, talk about Yaakov, and you talk about the... Yaakov is a from guy.
But we all have the opportunity to react like Chana did, and that is that we can experience something unusual, we can go through something extraordinary, something special, and we can choose to take action and to do something with our own hands, and to say that this moment directly relates to the experience that I'm having and to the life that I'm going to live going forward. We can be like Paro, as we mentioned, just roll over when you have a dream and say, all right, it's not relevant to me, and go back to sleep. Like the Pasuk says, Vayishan, he goes back to sleep, Vayachalom Shenis. Or we can choose to react and respond like Yaakov Avinu. Vayikatz Yaakov, and he says immediately, Achin Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. This is amazing, and I'm shocked, and I can't believe that God is telling me something, and now he has to figure out what God means to teach him, and what he's supposed to walk away with in a practical and a pragmatic sense, how it's supposed to change the life that he's living. So I've been thinking a lot that so many Americans and so many Jews around the world have been so amazed and so astounded by the recent announcement that the American government made, declaring the status of Yerushalayim as the eternal capital of the Jewish people and of the state of Israel. And yes, it's certainly an amazing phenomenon, and it's something that we certainly should not and cannot ignore. But what I keep asking myself over this past week since that announcement has been made is, so it's very nice, but what does that announcement actually mean for me? And what am I supposed to do? So how will this incredibly special feeling that every Jew probably feels, how will it change my perspective in a practical way about my relationship with Eretz Yisrael and with Yerushalayim in particular? Do I just marvel at that amazing video, at that amazing speech, and watch it over and over again until it gets boring and until we have something else that we can watch on the news, the next item that we can focus our attention on? Or do I actually do something which shows that I care deeply about Yerushalayim and the message that God sent me, this incredible dream that we've all been asking for, we've all been waiting for, and this is something we campaigned about, and it's something everyone was waiting with many presidents that they should make such an announcement, but do I recognize now that it's made, now that that declaration has been proclaimed by the American government, do I recognize that God is obviously communicating something special to me? And do I do something about it, or do I just roll back over and say, I'll go back to sleep until something else happens, and there's no reason to get frazzled, there's no reason to get excited, because I don't even recognize how monumental it is, the moment that we live through. And I think this is something that we always have the opportunity to make the choice of how we're going to respond, of how we're going to react when we go through something powerful, when we experience something monumental and something unusual in the experiences of our lives. As we know, the Ramban has a very famous comment in his Sefer HaEmunah VaHabitachon. On the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, where the Torah tells us, Im ta'iru v'im ta'oru es ha'ahava ad shetechbat. So obviously the Pasuk means, on a very literal sense, one thing, but the Ramban writes that perhaps it means something deeper, and that is, if a person has a moment of inspiration, Im ta'iru, if you're going to be inspired, v'im ta'oru, if you feel personally elevated or uplifted because of an experience that you just went through in life, says the Ramban, you have to immediately take that feeling and translate it into something tangible. Ad shetechbatz, you have to make it into a chefetz, you have to make it into something that you're going to go forward in your life with and make it into something realistic. Because otherwise, he says, we know that human nature is that feelings very quickly wither away and feelings will fade and they'll be lost forever and we will never be able to go back to that sensational feeling that we may have had at a moment of inspiration. Therefore, writes the Ramban, since human nature is to simply ignore and to forget and to move on because we live in such a fast-paced world, and certainly we do today, more so than a few hundred or a few thousand years ago, this is something that we're given the opportunity to do every time we're given a dream, like Yaakov Avinu and like Paro, a moment of inspiration where it's clear that God is communicating with us. It takes our wherewithal to think about how are we going to translate those messages and what should the message mean practically for those of us Jews who care deeply about the moment that we're living through today. What is it supposed to mean? Do we strengthen our ties to Yerushalayim? Do we do something extra to show the Ribono Shel Olam how grateful, how thankful we are for the incredible gift, for the little whisper, for the great miracle, and for all the things that we've all been looking forward to for so many generations and for so many years?